hurry, hurry. Step right up and witness the incomparable healing powers of Brain Junk Elixir. Why, it cured me of my gout and set my mother on the road to healthfulness. Two sips in the morning, and you too will have a bright shine to your eyes and a bloom on your cheeks.
Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. And that's right, today we're going to be talking about everything you never knew you wanted to know about snake oil. So first, let me give you a little background here. So snake oil, in case you don't know, is a substance with no real medicinal value, sold as a remedy for all diseases. Mm-hmm. It's kind of under this umbrella of this great word. It's called quackery. That's a
very good word.
Dishonest practices and claims to have special knowledge in some field, typically in medicine. So snake oil falls under the category of patent medicines. That's a commercial product advertised as a medicine without regard to its effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So I could say, here, I have this great lotion, and if you rub it on, it will take care of your warts. And I haven't done a study, and I don't have any science to back this up, but, you know, it gives you a kind of a stinging sensation when you rub it on, and so clearly it must be working. That's a mm-hmm. snake oil medicine.
Part of me has a deep fondness for this because I really, really love to lie once in a while and really pull the wool over convincingly. I don't know why I enjoy that. I can't do it when the stakes are down, like if my kids are asking me something serious. I can't. They know. But if it doesn't matter, if I'm just trying to convince you that this is going to take care of your warts, I'm good at it, and it's fun, but I don't like the deception that, and the robbing poor people of their money, and then they're going to continue to have warts.
Yes, and what's unfortunate, too, about snake oil is that, the origin of it mm-hmm. is in the 1860s, we had Chinese laborers immigrating to the United States to work on the Transcontinental Railroad, mm-hmm. and they were rubbing their sore muscles with an ointment made from the Chinese water snake, which actually did work because it's full of omega-3 acids, mm-hmm. which are good on inflammation. Hucksters got wind of the Chinese lotion and decided that they were going to make their own. And to give their elixir credibility, many claimed the recipes came from native healers.
That's a nice vague term.
Right? You know, I saw an Indian man using this and it worked great. So it turns out that they were using rattlesnake grease, and it was used by some tribes like the Choctaw to alleviate arthritis pain, but its non-inflammatory properties were not as great as mm-hmm. the water snake. The rattlesnake was also used to heighten the danger and excitement during pitches.
I can see that. That seems very exciting.
Yes. So the most famous is this man named Clark Stanley. He dressed like a cowboy and wowed crowds at the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago by, he'd get up there and he's got his bottles of snake oil, which it was actually called a snake oil. And he's telling you about the wonders of it and how it can alleviate pain and do all this sort of stuff. They would take rattlesnakes and either actually kill them or pretend to kill them because they're snake wrestling, you know? So it's the medicine of the Wild West.
It's like the Vitamix guy at the fair.
Exactly. You know, except instead of the little Mike and he's yelling at you to come watch him puree some vegetables,
he'd be
waving these snakes around. And then his wife had an interesting advertising kind of thing.
Oh, I found his wife when I was looking up other stuff. And apparently she also played a role in his traveling show. She had a full outfit made of rattlesnake skin, head to toe. And this is from the time where women wore ankle-length skirts. It is a voluminous outfit with a full trench coat that's knee-length looking, and it's all rattlesnake skin. She's wrestled a lot of snakes.
Can you imagine, you know, you're in Chicago and you're this provincial person from the East Coast, and they've got,
me in St. Louis.
Yeah, and then here comes this Pecos Bill kind of fellow, mm-hmm. and he's got his waxed mustache, and he's got his cowboy garb that he's playing up, and then his wife is just dressed in snake skin.
That would be a really, like, the crowd would part, I'm sure.
So they're selling this stuff hand over fist mm-hmm. and making tons of money. And he was not the only one. There were a lot of people who were coming up with products, cooking them up in their kitchens, or it was a remedy that, okay, it might have worked, like mm-hmm. the snake oil, you know, it did work, but then somebody was like, I can make this cheaper and sell it. So what started happening is there was a lot of public outrage that started building over this medical quackery.
Because people were figuring out that my warts are still warty.
That I spent 50 cents on this lotion mm-hmm. and I don't feel any better. And it hasn't cured my cancer. So
not got increased vigor.
Yep. So that led to the Pure Food and Drug Act in 1906. And one of the things that they were starting to make people do was put labels on their products. So Clark Stanley, mm-hmm. Mr. Snake Oil himself, in 1917, a shipment of his snake oil was seized by the U.S. government, and they figured out it had mineral oil, red pepper, which if you rub it on your skin, it's going to make it feel warm.
Yeah, don't rub it in your eyes.
Traces of turpentine or camphor, and that would give it a medicinal smell.
Oh, for sure.
Yep, and 1% of it was fatty oil, but they think it probably came from cattle, not snakes.
Mama's lard jar from the counter?
Yeah.
Oh!
So he was fined $20, which is about $429 in today's dollars, for misbranding his product and by falsely and fraudulently representing it as a remedy for all pain. Mm. So then what happened is, so here we go, people trying to work their way around the system. Mm-hmm. Labeling, they would say it was once known as snake oil, or 4 years it was called snake oil, but does not contain snake oil. And they also did things like they would say instead of a cure that it was a remedy.
That's interesting. And I'm just thinking about the logistics of communicating. We have the internet and it's fast and easy to look up the news, but this is not an era where that kind of information proliferated quickly. So this had to have had a really distinct impact on society.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you think about the fact that I could go to a town, I could go and sell my Make Man tablets.
I just love that name.
You know, and so it's supposedly full of iron and it can converts puny weaklings into husky men. And
this now in modern times might have a warning about when you should visit the ER if its effects are still happening.
Oh, yeah.
Is that kind of medicine?
No, it had potassium sulfate, which is a laxative. It has ferrous carbonate, iron carbonate, and ferrous oxide, iron oxide, which are slightly toxic and can cause stomach pain. So, but you could go and you could sell these and people would be taking them. Well, by the time people are getting sick because they're taking too many, you're long gone. You're in another town.
Yes.
And you're just switching it up or you change the name. I mean, it was definitely.
Gyms.
Yeah. You know, you're mixing up a new batch in your wagon and you sell it at the next town.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to, okay, so there's shady medicines that have things like mercury and lead in them, or they didn't have anything in them that actually was medically used at all. There were also
filler stuff.
Yep. There were also medications like Mrs. Winslow's soothing syrup, which was for infants.
Nice. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, as a mother, I think that sounds lovely.
And the ads are just, you know, it shows this mom and she's holding the baby up and everybody looks happy because it had morphine in it.
Everybody was happy.
So your child is relaxed and sleeping, but God help you if you run out because your child's also an addict and they're going to lose their mind when you don't have any.
I had not even, because I've been noodling this whole snake oil thing and hadn't even thought of that with children's medicines. Wow. Odds are that they're going to get a little sick because of some of the filler stuff or the things that are supposed to make it smell medicinal. Yikes.
Yeah. Also, a Belgian company had cocaine throat drops.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, which they said were indispensable for singers, teachers, and orators. Because, you know, what I want in a teacher is somebody who's coked up.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like 2 hours of class condensed down into one for the orators.
What's so fascinating about all of these kind of medical things is like the morphine and the cocaine. Well, they work.
Yeah, they do a thing.
But then you have something like Lydia E. Pinkham's vegetable compound for female complaints.
I have a lot of female complaints and I'm not sure Lydia was considering them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she was mixing this up in 1873. It's a mix of alcohol and herbs. And also, I love the names of these. Most of them had someone's name, you know, Mrs. Winslow or Lydia E. Pinkham's, these sort of things, because they felt that it lent it.
Crabby Aunt Patty's Night Night Juice. like if we call them their real names.
They felt it. It lent them a certain cachet, like it was a real person. But Lydia's stuff, the problem with these ones that have actual things in them, like morphine, is that there's no real dosage. Often they'd say, take when needed. Or, you know, if you feel the palpitations of your heart or your face is flushing or, you know, you're having a woman's complaint, just a tablespoon of Lydia Pinkham's will, you know, set you right. Well, it was... It was 20% alcohol.
It would set you very right.
It has a lot of herbs in it that, like we were talking about this before, that has things where in small doses it might be fine, but in large doses it could cause all sorts of problems.
Like
in the body.
Actually are medicinal at a certain level, though, some of those herbs.
Yes, but then you're also getting 20% alcohol. And I looked this up. Beer is 5% alcohol, and a shot is 40% alcohol. So if you're taking hits off of this all day because of your female complaints, well, you're probably going to be pretty mellow.
Yes. I feel fortunate to live in an era where there is a little more media and we know more, because I'm sure that I would have been sipping all day long. My poor family.
You know, it's just whatever you got to do to get through.
You need to take the edge off a little, kids.
Right? Oh, and here's the interesting thing. So Lydia Pinkham's is still sold commercially, except now it's not with the alcohol. It's the herbs.
That's a little disappointing.
Well, yeah, and the herbs are still problematic, but it's still sold.
Wow, that's a long life. I think my favorite part of this, I already told you what my favorite part is the characters that go along with selling this, because I feel like you need a compelling figure to make the sale work, or a really great product description. But it needs that Clark Stanley person to really move some product. Enjoy that part of it.
Like Dr. Agnew's cure for the heart.
Dr. Agnew.
Which was made by the Anglo-American Medicine Company, which really cranked me because I was like, what is this, the white people's medicine company?
Pretty much, yeah.
In 1898. But he was one of the ones that fell victim to the Pure Food and Drug Act.
Oh,
because he said it's his cure for the heart. And it was one of these where it didn't actually do anything. And
he missed the first wave.
He totally missed that. Yeah. So and so he had to change it from cure to Dr. Agnew's remedy for the heart.
Aw, poor guy.
But then when he did that, the sales went...
It doesn't sound as compelling.
No, people were like, "Maybe I should just go to the doctor.
I do want a cure.
Yeah, I should just go to the doctor, maybe, and try that.
Upton Sinclair ruined it for the snake oil salesman. We've talked about him, or the Pure Food and Drug Act, but he is really the one that really the big push for the Meat Inspection Act and the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906 through his investigations. And that really was the beginning of the end for snake oil.
And Mr. Upton, he was the hot dog guy, right?
He went undercover and investigated the meat.
The meat plants. Packing industry.
One of the parts of that Pure Food and Drug Act and the fallout from that was that the Food and Drug Administration, which came about more in the 1930s, at that time, it only applied to food and drugs moving in interstate commerce. So it had to move in and out of state.
Is that because they... Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but a lot of the people that I was looking at who were selling a lot of these snake
very
oil
transient.
Items. Yeah, well, because like we said, because how are you going to catch them if they don't stay in town?
Right. Or they just ride the rail line or head down the river to the next town and out. Yeah.
Clearly, as long as there are people who want to make money and people who have illnesses which make them easy prey, do we still do these sorts of things?
There was an article this week as I was doing my research about a fellow at a public event. He was selling $38 bottles of hot dog water. And it says, we'll post a link to this. It says hot dog water, right? He clearly labels it and says what it is. But people are so enchanted with that idea of that magic fix, the quick fix, something great. People bought this water. And I think that his idea was it's sort of a commentary on society. And I don't think he expected to people to buy his $38 water. And they totally did.
Is that
and
the one that
this week
there was like a hot dog actually in the jar?
It looks like it. Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was a picture or an actual. Like your martini comes with onions. Your hot dog water comes with a hot dog. $38. And it looked like a fancy glass water bottle. And it really was hot dog water.
Even when we have truth in advertising, we still just don't want. I think, you know, maybe the moral of the story is we are giant fans of a good story.
Oh, yeah. We want the magic to work. Mm-hmm.
And that if I just rub this on or if I just take this pill, I wouldn't actually have to exercise. Like there's a fat off. There's this fat off obesity compound that sold for a really long time. And it was just soap and water. But people, you know, and they're telling people if you, it will take care of your cellulite and you just rub it on and then it'll go away. And
the things that made it work then are definitely the things that still make it work now. The appropriation of scientific terminology is if you can use words that the average citizen might not use very much, it will sound more dazzling, like you're an expert and we're not. Misrepresented research from real scientists is a big deal now. There's maybe a sprinkling of bit of truth or a real true fact, but they've twisted how it's being used. Lots of websites slathered with testimonials. There's a lot of online presence for snake oil cures, and they show you the worst thing, the worst case, and then and this is Jim, and he's used it, and it's fine.
It's almost like we have more of an opportunity to create that predatory environment. Because if it was just the guy standing on top of his wagon and he's like, step right up, I've got 10 bottles I need to sell, versus, well, I went and looked and it's this very nicely organized website and it's got pictures and
big words and tiny font.
That's true. Yep. And then the bending of statistics. You know, my husband does, he's a chemist and how he comes home and he's gone to a meeting where they're all talking about test results. Mm-hmm. Now, he works at a company that's doing drug manufacturing. Even the drug manufacturing people are, well, if you decide that this many batches did this and then this many batches did that, then we have an 80% success rate.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, but if you look at the data a different way, we have a 60% success rate. So even people that are on the up and up, you know, depending on how you look at something, it's how the data comes down.
There was an interesting, and this is only sort of related, I listened to a radio show on, it was a hot dog or sausage manufacturer, and they moved from one plant to the next. And when they moved, the hot dogs didn't take on the nice, deep red color.
That was the guy who was pushing them around the the place,
they
right?
They went for a walk. And so even that just reminds me of that. With the best intentions, we can be wrong. Consumer Reports has our back. They had a great article about some modern snake oil claims that were actually debunked and people were fined and charged for this. One of them is the Q-ray bracelet. It was claimed to alter the body's energy, relieving pain, and the maker cited a study showing that the wearers had less pain. The thing that troubles me about these are people in discomfort. There's a real problem that they're trying to solve and they're willing to spend that money to solve the problem. This one was busted in 2011 and they were fined, the company that made these, $12 million was refunded to the people who bought the bracelets between 2000 and 2003.
Well, and what's also difficult is the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly finding that if you believe that something is going to make you feel better, there is some statistical evidence that that does work.
Yeah,
you know?
Red pills make people feel better. I buy the red one. If there's a red one, I buy it.
Well, I guess we're talking about levels of discomfort and levels of pain. You know, if you have a twisted ankle, which is bad, but it's not awful. And someone tells you if you wear these blue socks, that's going to take away some of your pain. You may actually feel less pain. The problem is when you've got someone
your wallet's feeling a lot of pain.
Well, or when you've got someone who's telling you that this herb thing is going to cure your cancer.
Yes. And you're neglecting other treatment.
Exactly. Because of someone taking advantage of that. I think culturally we have a romance with the huckster, the snake oil person who it's almost like the same way we love the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like the fact that this person is managing to pull the wool over our eyes, but we kind of respect this. Well, like you were saying, you were really proud of yourself you're like, I can totally lie and I could make you believe me. And there is this power in that.
Yes. We all have, well, some of us, maybe not everybody, a little Napoleon complex. I'm convinced. One of the other ones that seemed very terrible to me, and as a parent now whose children spoke plenty early enough, there was a product called Speak. It was a blend of nutrients, and the marketers claimed to aid speech development in children as soon as the first week of taking it. And I think my children spoke plenty soon enough.
What was in Speak?
Vitamins. Nutrients. The Better Business Bureau has put the kibosh on it, and it had to be relabeled differently. The Truth in Advertising Consumer Watchdog Group removed some of the claims and testimonials. So I think you can still buy products from this brand, but they are labeled differently now. They have to say, maybe we'll promote better health, which could lead to better talking. The most horrible one to me that really gets me, the ones where I can't, it's not okay with me, are there was an acne app. And this is in the age of the smartphone, because the idea was that you could put this phone up to your face and it would project a colored light at your face. And that would help with the acne. And that one is, I hate that idea that there's hope for a kid or a person. And it'll be 7 to 10 days. Well, 7 to 10 days is the cycle of the thing. And just that false hope that, no, holding that app up to your face is more of a joke than any. It's not helping. Happily, the FTC announced in 2011 that the app's makers agreed to a settlement barring them from making acne treatment claims anymore. So,
oh, excellent.
The good guy wins.
Wash your face. Don't hold your phone up to it.
Yeah. Your greasy phone.
Covered with bacteria.
Yeah.
Wow. So what are we going to talk about before we go?
I kind of thought that the sea monkeys, you guys remember what the sea monkeys from childhood comic books?
I always wanted sea monkeys and my parents wouldn't let me get it. Now that I'm older, I know, because they were like, shh. So tell us about sea monkeys in case somebody doesn't know.
We had a slug of comic books in the upstairs at the lake growing up. They were my uncles. So lots of Archie and Veronica. Loved Archie and Veronica. And what's her name? Betty. I feel like we can't not mention Betty.
That's true.
Okay. Betty, Archie, and Veronica. But at the back of these, invariably, and it's not just sea monkeys. There was x-ray glasses and all these products at the back of comic books. And I think that's also one of those childhood things where it is super awesome. The description is great. The sea monkeys were my special favorite, because I posted on social media recently, they have these three little cute things coming out of their head, and mom is accessorized and she's got blonde hair.
They kind of look like a fun little family of aliens.
Yeah. So it turns out they do not look like that. We all know, we're all adults. We know that's not. But and I was kind of a skeptical childhood, but in my heart, I wanted it to be true. So I was looking up a true picture of what the actual sea monkey is like, and it's a tiny little shrimp that they manage. And there's some actually interesting science around this. The company managed to make them so that they would be encased in some substance, and then when it hit the water, it would let them rehydrate and resume animation. But these are things that look like, I don't know, it's like a toothbrush.
Yeah.
With a tail, an aquatic toothbrush. And apparently it starts life with one eye, but then as it grows, it develops three. So maybe those three little things on the head are the eyeballs. There's some truth there.
Yeah, but what a betrayal. You know, you think you're going to be getting this, like, because it was almost like the Jetsons looking sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was going to be this whole city. And
you spend your $1.25 and you learn how to use the mail and you labeled it properly the second time.
Yeah. And then it's just add water to this weird powder and it makes these tiny little sea toothbrushes.
Which will live for a month. And this is a commercially still available product. And I think the advertising is a little different now, a little bit more direct about what you're really getting, because we can just click online and Yelp the heck out of you if you sell us crappy stuff. Now it's a little harder now with the instant feedback available too.
That's true. There's our one advantage.
You can get sea monkeys and you really know what you're getting, which are neat if you know what you're getting. Please come visit us at brainjunkpodcast.com. We'll have pictures and more notes for you on our version of snake oil. Maybe we'll cook up some product you can buy. It's going to be good. It's completely legit.
Oh, no. Excuse me, I'm going to go get a lawyer.
It's going to be largely baking soda based, because that's inexpensive. For this and other wonderful episodes, look for Brain Junk wherever you find your podcasts. We tweet at My Brain Junk. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Brain Junk Podcast.
Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.